You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 36. This minute opens with David activating the control panel and ends with a ghostly apparition running down a corridor. David seems to know exactly what to do with that control panel. All he really has is a theoretical grasp of the engineer language, so at best this should have been a bit of trial and error. Just because you recognize the letters on a keyboard does not mean you automatically know how to work a computer. Not to say that this is really a complaint, there's no reason to draw this scene out any longer than it was, but at the very least it seems as if David wasn't entirely sure what to expect when he pressed those buttons. He looks around, and soon a light pulses through the tunnels. This is the point where I consider the movie to turn into a haunted house in space. Not unlike the original Alien. I think this may be the most crucial moment in the film, especially in regards to David's journey. This is everything we need to know about him in a few seconds. David looks on in wonder at the projection of the engineers. He is consumed by their image, as if he too is a god, and deserves to be amongst their ranks. But they pass through him, indifferent to his existence, once more being ignored. He watches almost confused or disappointed as they leave him behind. Did he think they were real? This could even be seen as a thesis of the prequels. David's narrative may not be center stage yet, but in hindsight, this is the story it was trying to tell. Viewed from his perspective, I believe the story makes more sense. It's more consistent and explains why characters who were supposed to be our protagonists are fairly disposable. It amazes me that these prequels didn't set out to be about an android. David was not a major character in the early drafts, and yet it has evolved into this strange, unique tale about a synthetic, with aliens taking a backseat, and I, for one, enjoy it. As the engineers run down the corridor, everyone freaks out and assumes the projections are real too. I don't blame them for being a little on edge. This scene also contrasts the difference between synthetics and humans. David is calm, fearless, and unflinching in the face of this unknown entity. But the humans act as humans do, on impulse. This entire film could be seen as an exploration into human impulses, fear and desire especially. Hubris too, having taken their helmets off in utter confidence. And, well, that's to say nothing of Wayland himself. It's a nice choice to show the engineers in their space jockey armor. At this point, we have nothing concrete to connect the engineers to the space jockey just yet. When the helmet of the decapitated head is later removed, it's a nice, efficient way of marrying the two creatures into one concept. I figure the suggestion here is that the projection is a kind of CCTV, but this has to be the least efficient way of doing it. You would have to chase holograms for who knows how long to find the information you were looking for. Lack of practicality aside, it obeys the rule of cool. It looks impressive and serves to create a moment of genuine tension. We hear an animalistic scream. The record of this past event is otherwise soundless. What is this scream?
What was that?
David?
It sounds almost mechanical, but I don't imagine this just being emitted by whatever device runs these holograms. Does this sound originate from the threat the engineers were running from? By the end of the film, we never really know what happened here. All we have is a dead body and a broken door. The projection shows us at least six engineers, and yet, there is only one corpse. What is that about? Do the rest survive? I'll investigate this further in minutes to come. But, overall, I like that in an age where things are spelled out for the audience, Prometheus is full of mysteries. As I've mentioned before, it feels like walking through an ancient city. There are going to be things we don't recognize. There are going to be things that will never have an answer. However, there is definitely a screeching sound of some kind. Can we extrapolate from this evidence that something was infected by the mutagen? Perhaps somewhere hidden in this labyrinthian temple there is a monstrous corpse. The engineer that becomes the corpse is seen lagging behind in the projection. He stumbles. Has he already been infected? His chest hasn't burst open, so we can rule that out, at least as cause of death. A quick moment from the Lindelof Paradise script, page 31. The group moves into another large chamber. distinguished by what appears to be 8 massive pits in the ground. Shaw approaches, shines her flashlight into one of them, but it's swallowed by the darkness, so deep. She turns to David, who stands at the lip of another pit, looking down. David, can you see the bottom? No. A shrug and a smile. I have my limitations. Shaw studies him. Why does it feel like he's lying, sir? The script already has that uncertainty about David. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by a Minute on Facebook. And a little bit of an update about my life, for those who don't follow me on the social medias. The episodes have been coming out less frequently lately, and I will endeavour to put them out as frequently as I can. But yeah, my life turned pretty chaotic all of a sudden, all at once. I've had chronic fatigue for a while now, but recently it's become quite debilitating. Can't really leave the house alone, and I often need a wheelchair. I can't really walk too far or stand for too long. I'd almost finished my librarianship degree. I didn't have that many units left, but one of those was a prac placement, so I can't really, you know, do work experience stuff. So I had to, well, it's a leave of absence, so I can finish that at some point in the future. Then my family is pretty awful and unsupportive, or most of them are. I was kicked out of home, essentially. They're kind of abusive, let's be honest, yeah? Thankfully, I've got really good friends, and they're giving me a place to stay for now. So I'm technically homeless. That's a new one. And then, yeah, trying to get on disability pension and try and get some sort of housing situation sorted. Oh, also, my dog died a couple of weeks ago. He was 12, so, you know, it's not that premature. So, yeah, you know, all in all, fairly dramatic things happening all at once. But overall, I'm doing okay. I've got very supportive friends, and obviously you, the fans, have been very helpful as well. Thank you, Mark Boda, for your donation through Ko-fi, and there's a few other friends who've donated through there as well. Definitely needed it right now. But on the bright side, at least I have more time to focus on podcasts, at least when I feel up to it. I actually have a cold right now. So on top of having chronic fatigue, I have a cold. I'm just... Can I have a robot body? Can we like, start a Kickstarter for that? Yeah? But, overall, things are getting better. It's just been quite chaotic for the past couple of weeks, but I'm reaching an equilibrium here. So, yeah, thanks everyone for your support, and I'll try to get these shows out as frequently as I can. I would rather give you my best work rather than just hitting a deadline. Quality over quantity, I always say.